Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Tuesday, June 20th. I'm Matt Harmon, coming to you from one of the final CondoCast episodes here, because by this time next week, fingers freaking crossed, I'll be fully set up in the studio, in the new house. We'll no longer be here in this condo. But, you know, all that aside, you know, 1,000 Home Depot trips aside, we got serious business to get here today, because we are doing our fifth installment of our summer series called Flip the Scripts. It's a negative one today. So unfortunately, the man joining me to be a fellow negative Nancy here is the great Scott Pianowski, who I never have any negative things to say about any negative feelings towards you, Scott. But unfortunately, this is a negative one here today. But what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Yeah, you need a negative co-host. You bring me in. Look, here's the thing, right? I mean, in fantasy, fade everything is like a good strategy. It's harder to be good than it is to be bad, you know, and it's, if you were to, ultimately, your success in fantasy will come down on the successful players that you pick, but there is certainly value to be mined from knowing which teams to avoid, or at least, you know, speculate. We're all speculating this stuff anyway, and today is a speculation episode, but avoiding landmines, certainly if you had avoided the Rams last year, if you had stayed away from Stafford, stayed away from Allen Robinson, which I'm going to just endorse that for the rest of his career. Cooper Kupp got hurt. He was absolutely breaking football until he got hurt. And I still think he was the MVP of the league 2 years ago. But it's going to be a fade episode. And also, you know, if you want to fade Scott Pianowski, using myself in the third person, I mea culpa from last week's episode. I referred to Jared Goff as a three-time Pro Bowler. True. A two-time Super Bowl appearance guy. Not true. He's actually stuck on one. I conflated the McVay, Goff, Stafford, all that stuff. You know, obviously, Goff was in one Super Bowl. He played very poorly. Brandon Cooks was open for about 27 minutes on a seam pattern and scoffed through the pass late. It was one of the worst. You know, I'll rewatch almost any Super Bowl. That's one game I have no interest in watching again. And I'm a Patriots fan, for crying out loud. It wasn't much of a game. But Jared Goff is stuck at one. We all know he's going to go to like six or seven Super Bowls. But it's still one. Now, the great thing, Matt and Colin, is that when you get something wrong, it's okay, because the internet will catch it. And thankfully, you know, 20 or 30 very kind listeners, followers, Yahoo hooligans out there did catch my mistake. So I appreciate that, keeping me honest, keeping me accountable, which is what we always want to be about on this program.
You know what, Scott? The beginning of Jared Goff's career, and part of what I think led the Rams the decision to move on from him, was that it was very hard to separate how much responsibility did McVay have for the offensive success, and how much responsibility did Jared Goff have for the offensive success of the LA Rams? So, you know what? You molded those two together. That was a pretty common thing to do during Jared Goff's Rams tenure. So, you know what? That's fine. If that's the worst mistake we make on the podcast in the year 2023, it won't be. And you won't be alone there, Scott. We're doing all right. So I think that's fine. But like you mentioned, this podcast today we're going to try to identify this year's LA Rams. Look, that's just like the team that's going to completely fall off the cliff. Like you mentioned, other than Cooper Kupp for half of a season, basically any, you know, fantasy player that you took from the Rams, it was a stone cold disaster. And obviously with the Allen Robinson one, you know, part of what I said with Robinson was like, hey, even if you don't trust like my opinion on the player, you should trust the Rams ecosystem, Drink. You should trust, you know, the Rams history at identifying like free agent veteran wide receivers. They've basically hit it out of the park every single time with like Robert Woods, with Brandon Cooks. Like, their pro scouting is really, really good. Well, basically the entire infrastructure completely caved in onto itself. And, you know, like the Rams coming off a Super Bowl, they're expected to be a top contender again in the NFC. They cratered. A lot of injury, bad luck there for them. I really think, like, Scott, part of me does think if they had a league average or even just like a league functional offensive line, we'd be having a very different conversation about the LA Rams in 2022 and really where they stood right now. But still, you know, this is a franchise now that's being forced to think about, like, what's our path going forward? You know, we have some really high-end superstars, but we don't really know what their futures are. Like, how long is Aaron Donald going to be around? How long is Matthew Stafford going to want to be around? So, I don't know. The Rams are now, I would kind of, they're a strange team because they still have those superstars, but I do think they're kind of in the wilderness and staring down like an eventual, like they're in, I think, the early stages of some sort of rebuild. You know, we don't, when they're going to get there, I don't know, but we're kind of trying to find that team there. And, you know, just on the Rams, Scott, was there any sort of like, because I always like to do this with these episodes, was there any way to sort of see the Rams collapse coming?
To that extent, no. I mean, it's a case of the roster. We knew the roster was old. We knew that their windows are always smaller in the NFL than you think they are anyway, but we knew their window was really short. They won the title. The flag flies forever. The banner flies forever. So that's worth it. But, and then you talked about all the guys, how much longer is so-and-so going to be here? So-and-so going to be here. We can also say that about McVay. I mean, it's possible. There are a lot of rumors he was going to leave coaching after last year. I think he just didn't want to leave with the bad taste in his mouth. And who knows? Maybe he'll coach the Rams for another 12 years. I don't know. But I suspect that he's eventually just going to say, I'm a little burnt out. I need to do some consulting. I need to get my toes in the sand. And he'll come back rejuvenated, maybe just kind of do what Sean Payton's doing right now, although with a shorter window. It's interesting that you caught. So I don't know. I don't think you could have seen this coming from the Rams. It's a case of, well, they really got old all of a sudden and a lot of guys got hurt. The teams I'm looking at when we're going to get into fading, it's going to come down to, and we saw it with Stafford getting hurt. We saw it with Wilson collapsing. The quarterback is the thread of the entire offense. He's the face of every franchise in every city. And if you can get to this quarterback's in trouble, this quarterback's in a iffy age, he's got iffy health concerns, maybe he doesn't fit the offense, whatever it is. A lot of the teams when I was preparing for this episode, 7-8 minutes ago, I was thinking, okay, do I see this quarterback potentially collapsing? Because that's what it really comes down to. Last year, Stafford got hurt and was playing poorly before he was fully, to the point that he couldn't play anymore. And like the NFL is quarterback driven. I'm not breaking any new ground there. Right. But I feel like this episode specifically is going to be like, okay, is this quarterback maybe kind of close to the quicksand? Because if he is, that's when everything can go kablooey. And what's interesting when we get into some of these teams is that I'm looking at these quarterbacks, not sure. And then I think, wow, look at the collateral damage. Look at the players I'm drafting in early rounds who could be taken down by this, And last year with the Rams, Kupp was great anyway, and then he got hurt. And Kupp kind of had that Derrick Henry season from the year before, where even though he got hurt, you couldn't feel that bad for their managers because they got like half a season of production, and he was so good right. when he was playing. But some of the teams we're going to discuss today, man, I'm like, wow, if this does go kablooey, I'm scared because I'm going to have a lot of their skill players.
100%. And I think a couple things here. One, obviously, I think every team injuries and especially like quarterback drop off, whether it's injuries or just a random, like they forget how to play football or something like that. If the Chiefs lose Patrick Mahomes for any extended amount of time or, they suffer an injury to Travis Kelce, the Chiefs are not going to be very good. They're going to have a collapse type of season. So so quarterback and injuries, that's like the connective tissue for any of these drop-offs. But I think with the Rams, it was built on, and this is different from the Broncos, where like we did the Broncos episode with Frank, where it was kind of like, even looking back on it, like the 49ers, like there was sort of like new stuff, right? This wasn't an established team, is what we're kind of looking at with like this year's Broncos, even though the 49ers didn't end up not really fitting in that. But like I think for these, it's is the foundation of this team built on more like fragile ground, which I think is what the Rams pushing that window 1 year longer, right? With the Ramsey core, the Aaron Donald core, even though Donald, obviously he got hurt, injuries there, stuff like that. Really, we knew at some point, Scott, that the bargaining that they were doing with, trading first round picks, which with kicking the can down the window, like the F them picks thing, you eventually do have to pay the credit card bill. And unfortunately the unit that paid it was the offensive line. They were basically like, all right, well, we got to cover this $20K credit card bill with the offensive line here. And I think that was the like fragile ground that this was built on. And I think that's going to be the case with some of our teams here today.
You say kicking the can down the road. That's how I play keeper in Dynasty, is I treat the current season. If my team has enough to legitimately go for it, I try to win the season now and assume that the league will disband in 2 or 3 years. I just made a trade in one of my
sometimes a good bet, by the way.
Yeah, right. You have to know your ownership, your co-managers and all that stuff. But in the NFL, man, if you throw all your chips in and you win, again, the Rams had a horrible season last year. They're not taking that banner down. And so I would think everybody would think that's worth it. If you can go all in and get to the Super Bowl or certainly win it, that banner flies forever. But so let's do it, man. Let's fade some football teams.
Yeah. So for this year's Rams, we're kind of simply looking for a team that's, you know, still outwardly trying to be competitive, or they have been a recent perennial playoff team. But by the end of 2023, they could be or will be looking at a full rebuild or drastic changes at like the three key positions: quarterback, coach, general manager. You know, so obviously teams like the Cardinals, right? Like we've talked about, the Cardinals are not going to be good this year. They're not really what we're thinking about for this exercise. This is like that's a team that is in their rebuild, right? They have multiple potential top 10, top five picks. So they're kind of a different category here. These are more teams that are actually trying to be competitive this year, but that might not go so well. So they might be in a Rams type position. So I group these actually into three. You know, if you've listened to these episodes before, you know what we're going to do. We're going to go over the candidates. We're going to then hit like three finalists. We're going to vote on it. And if there's a tie, there always has been a tie, I think, for every single episode so far. Colin ends up breaking the tie. So I actually think these, for this exercise, I group the teams into three different categories. The first one is a couple of very obvious candidates and possibly cheating candidates. I put the Bucks and the Raiders here, Scott. The Bucks are sort of in that Rams vein where I thought that they'd tried to rebuild this offseason. I thought that this would be the year they go for a full reset. They didn't really do that, right? Like, they got rid of some guys like Leonard Fournette, you know, whatever. They got rid of Donovan Smith, their left tackle, who's now in Kansas City, but they're moving Tristan Wirfs to the left side. They re-signed Jamel Dean to a pretty decent sized contract. They go for the veteran stopgap route with Baker Mayfield to compete with Kyle Trask. They are clearly like, they're in a weird spot, Scott, because I think they could fall off the cliff, but at the same time, like, their roster is still pretty good. I think they kind of make for a good candidate here, and they're in the Rams vein too, where look, they won a Super Bowl a couple years ago with Tom Brady. They're a really good team with Tom Brady for that whole stretch of time. But are they trying to keep this window without Tom Brady? Like, are they trying to keep the Tom Brady window without Tom Brady open 1 year too long? I think they make sense in that sense. And the Raiders, look, I think it's obvious why they could fall apart. Now, I think they're kind of a cheating answer, but either of these two teams make sense as finalists and thoughts on the Rams, or excuse me, thoughts on the Bucks and Raiders overall.
Yeah, they're worth discussing, but I'm not going to put them any further than that. I'll say this. This is the first time I've ever been afraid to draft Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Mike Evans is one of those guys. One of you ever lost money on Mike Evans, you know, every year, 1,000 yards. He's usually a touchdown machine. Last year, he had that long stretch where he couldn't catch a touchdown. He'd drop touchdowns. He'd be wide open. He'd drop the touchdown. Just everything seemed to go wrong for him. And I wonder if you gave Tom Brady truth serum. I know he takes a lot of different natural things and everything. He's probably eating some avocado ice cream right now. But if you gave him some truth serum with that, does he regret coming back last year, right? I mean, they win the Super Bowl, yeah, and then the next year they gave the Rams all they could handle in a great playoff game, and Brady kind of died with his boots on. If you didn't go out into the sunset on the championship season, that next year would have been fine. He was an MVP candidate. And then last year they have a losing record. They go in the playoffs and get destroyed. They win a, you know, stupid division that it just didn't make any sense. So he kept, yeah, whatever. His legacy is what his legacy is. But we still, when you think Tom Brady's last season, I just think kind of mostly negative things. And now we get to watch Baker Mayfield. Look, I was actually happy when Baker had that one game, that like one primetime game where he played well last year, right around Christmas. I forget when it was. He had been on the Rams for like 10 seconds and he actually had a decent game. It's like, oh, good for Baker. It's at the point now where I actually feel a little bit sorry for him. I don't mean that in a condescending way, but just think of this guy. He's a Heisman Trophy winner. He's supposed to save the Browns franchise. They go to the playoffs 1 year. They give the Chiefs a scare in the playoffs. They're that, I mentioned last week, you know, the Lions were kind of like the Browns were that year, where it's like all of a sudden they couldn't get them on prime time enough. And we found out maybe Baker Mayfield isn't really all that good. He did not play well last year. There were circumstances. It was hard to play well in Carolina. Again, he wasn't on the Rams very long. This is an offense. I think at the end of the draft season, this is going to be one of the three or four offenses I've drafted into the least. And it's one thing when you look at some of the teams that just don't have a lot of talented players. That's not the problem here, because Evans is a borderline Hall of Famer already. And Chris Godwin is a heck of a good football player. I mean, there are Rashad White people out there, but I don't have any faith in any of their quarterbacks. And Mayfield's the best of a very sketchy line. They need somebody to develop, right? They needed the draft. Maybe they're thinking, okay, this is the year to be bad. Let's get Caleb Williams next year. I mean, a lot of people are going to have that plan. There's only one Caleb Williams, the last I checked. But Tampa Bay, man, the only good thing you can say is that the receivers are good and the division is weak. But they have 5-12 written all over them, and they're not going to be on my fantasy rosters. I'm going to ask you, draft takeaway. Josh Jacobs, we know, is not a dynamic receiver. He's tied to a team that everybody expects to have a losing record. The quarterback room could be a problem. And Davante Adams, even if you're in a room of people who are a little bit leery on Davante Adams, he's never getting out of the early second round at the latest. Are you, Matt Harmon, afraid to draft Davante Adams or Josh Jacobs at their expected ADP this summer?
I'm probably afraid to draft both of them, or at least like slightly nervous with a talent like Davante Adams. I think he is. I mean, he's like one of the best. I think he's one of the best receivers that's ever played. Like, his peak is one of the best wide receiver peaks we've ever seen. Still, it's like, I mean, it's Aiden O'Connell, like, as potentially, or Brian Hoyer. Like, that, I mean, that is a true, like, full on disaster. So I would say I'm nervous. I'm actually like afraid to draft Josh Jacobs for a variety of reasons. So yeah, he makes me a little nervous at his ADP for sure.
I know it's not just one size fits all of this stuff, but Adams is also 30, and I don't know when the danger zone is for receivers falling off. And it doesn't have to be like 28 is the age that makes me nervous with running backs, since the game took on its current shape. Or if you're good, you're not going to stay in college for 4 years. So your rookie year, a lot of times you're 21 years old, whatever. It used to be 30 was the danger age. And again, that's a back of envelope thing. It's a fortune cookie logic thing. It's not meant to be applicable to everybody. Everybody has a different body, different workload, different set of circumstances tied to them, and you have to kind of season that stuff to taste. But bottom line is this: when you get Davante Adams is wonderful, and I think I talked about Mike Evans being on a Hall of Fame trajectory, certainly Davante Adams. And when people talk about, oh, touchdown rates are fluky, it's like BABIP in baseball. No, a lot of players actually earn excellent touchdown rates, and Davante Adams was one of those guys. But when you go to your fantasy draft, your second round pick should excite you. You should be like, I can't wait to watch this guy play. Not like, oh my God, I hope it all doesn't go wrong for Davante Adams because I see all these red flags. If you feel that way about a guy, just don't take him. Your second round pick should make you, should give you joy. You should be like doing a Snoopy dance when you see the guy's name on your roster. And if you don't feel that way about him, you shouldn't be selecting him.
Yeah, it's good advice, because I'm like I'm the worst about that. It's just been like seeing the name. But there are times where, look, I don't care how far a guy falls. It's Davante Adams is that good. But all right, let's move on to the most likely group here of these candidates, starting with the Titans, who I think do need to be in this discussion. They might feel a little obvious, but they also haven't really fully committed to like a rebuild necessarily. And as long as Mike Vrabel is there, they're trying to win the Super Bowl. Like, Mike Vrabel is trying to compete. Mike Vrabel is trying to get this team to win. And he usually does a very good job with that, Scott, right? Like, he gets them to some sort of competency. They've got guys like, you know, Jeffrey Simmons is a really good player at defensive tackle. They have Derrick Henry. I mean, Derrick Henry certainly in that age where we're nervous about running backs, right? But he is still, at last time we saw him, a very, 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 very good running back. Like, I mean, still in the top five group of running backs last time we saw him. They don't have a ton else on offense. You know, I think I got a lot of questions about Treylon Burks. Their receiver room in general is pretty questionable. Chig Okonkwo showed some signs, but, you know, they're a team that I definitely think could potentially fall off the cliff here, Scott. Do you think they belong in the finalist group?
No, belong in the conversation group, but they're not going to advance to the next round. Although I'm surprised to see you soft pedal Chig Okonkwo, only because he's going to be America's sleeper in about a month. They're already putting down the chairs, they're arranging the settings and the backdrop and everything. And people, it's like, you know, getting ready for an outdoor wedding or something. Eventually those seats will all be filled. And people are going to be arguing who was first to Okonkwo, or who, oh, I drafted him with all my best ball teams in April before the NFL draft and all that, because, you know, he's an explosive player. We love tight ends who can make splash plays downfield, because a lot of times guys don't do that, but he's exciting. But I don't know if Burks's ceiling is ultimately a number one. We know Tannehill, mid-30s, at some point they'd like to turn this over to Will Levis. They did draft Malik Willis last year early, but the fact that they even drafted Levis now means they've probably given up on Willis as anything significant. And Henry, look, I lost money on Henry last year. I mean, he was into his age 28 season, off a season where he was hurt. Obviously, he ran the ball at a very high rate at Alabama. He's been used a lot, and he had a great season, and he met or outkicked his ADP. And in some leagues, if you were in leagues that were nervous about Henry, you might have gotten a ridiculous discount, and it might have been a reason why you got to the playoffs or maybe even won your league. So I got that wrong. I'm still going to come down on the side of, look, we know, look, I still think he could catch 50 or 60 passes, but he never plays for teams that want to use him that way. Not that he's Marshall Faulk or Christian McCaffrey or anything. I think he's underused in that scenario, but because he doesn't catch passes, you still need to take guys like Henry. This is applied to Jacobs too, or Rashad White, I guess, but you need your running backs on teams that win games. You need to have that positive game script, the positive game flow. And I don't see how the Titans have it. I'm glad you mentioned Vrabel, who I think if all the coaches, if every team was starting from scratch and first thing we did was draft head coaches, he would have to go super, super early. I mean, top five, top three. If you even took him first, I would not tell you you're wrong. I'm not saying he would be my pick, but he would certainly be in consideration for that. Vrabel's going to be the guy who's going to outlast everybody on the roster. I think he's a long-term answer, but this team, unlike the Raiders, where I'm talking myself out of players I like, or the Bucks, where I'm talking myself out of players I like, here it's like, well, okay, I'll probably lose the Okonkwo Derby because he's just so freaking trendy and people just have to throw their flag down on him. I don't trust Burks because I don't trust the quarterbacks. Ryan Tannehill certainly on the back nine. And Derrick Henry, I'm going to try to be a year early rather than a year late. Got it wrong last year, took a hit last year. He's going to go in the first round of drafts, probably, or early second round. I'm not going to write that ticket.
I really like Chico Conquo, but I think there's a chance where that scenario that you just played out there, where he gets way too like hyped and way too expensive in drafts. I think that's very, very, very possible. And just generally, like, do you want a, he was the most explosive Titans pass catcher last year, even if it was just for a short stint. I think he's a really good player, but like, do you want a 235, 240 pound, like, move tight end on a team that's probably going to be bottom five in pass attempts? I don't know. It's just a little risky there, I think. So I think there's a chance he could get steamed up. And
at least you can tell yourself a story where he's the most interesting pass catcher here, because, man, I'm looking at their depth. I'm looking at their depth chart at receiver right now. It actually makes me sad. And look, you know more about a lot of these secondary and tertiary guys than I do. But I mean, are you going to be drafted?
Not much.
Racy McMath, what do you got on me? How did he do in RP? You know, Colton Dowell, you high on him? Mason Kinsey, he's a real football player. Jacob Copeland, was he the drummer for the Police? I don't know.
This is like Chris Moore's 100th NFL team. He's had like a cup of coffee for a bunch of teams. Kyle Phillips is the only guy where I'm like, you know what? I think Kyle Phillips could be, I thought he was an interesting sleeper slot candidate coming into the NFL draft, like last year. So he's at least interesting to me. But again, how interested are we in a slot receiver on a team that's probably going to be very too tight end heavy, that's not going to spread the field and pass very much? So, yeah, I mean, they're definitely but at the same time, Scott, I think this is the same with the Rams, that they have Vrabel. I think their offensive line with Peter Skoronski there, you know, he's going to get them up to some level of competency. He's a good player. You know, Andre Dillard's a very risky signing at left tackle because he kind of fell out of favor with the Eagles. But, you know, I think potentially, if their line is decent and Ryan Tannehill's active and playing, I think their offense is going to be pretty somewhat decent just because he's a good player. I don't know. And Henry's still pretty good. So I agree. Now that I've thought about it, I don't know if they make much sense as a finalist here, because I think there are other candidates that are a little more interesting. So we can move on from the Titans. So I think also, by the way, Scott, like, are the Titans going to be worse than the Texans? Are the Titans going to be worse than the Colts? I could see, you could paint me that scenario, but I don't know that I'd bet on it being the most likely scenario. So let's talk about the Patriots. This could get really interesting. We must talk. If you want to talk about it in a negative sense, that's what we're doing here, right? So I think the way that the Patriots fall apart is pretty easy. They don't sign DeAndre Hopkins. They're going in with Devontae Parker or Tyquan Thornton as their top outside receiver, like their top X receiver. That is not inspiring to me. It's weird that there's a little bit of like Tyquan Thornton hype right now in the fantasy circles, because he was not a good rookie. He didn't have a very good rookie season. And, you know, Devontae Parker is not like a total slouch. I think he's at best, like, at his peak, he was an average starting NFL receiver, but he's not just going to roll over for a guy like Tyquan Thornton. I think, Kendrick Bourne, is he potentially going to be more in the mix here? Juju not having like the greatest offseason injury wise. He's still dealing with something that he was dealing with in Kansas City. I don't know. That's a little peculiar to me. This whole, like, okay, we get away from Matt Patricia, but do you get to a good offensive level? Does Mac Jones, like, take, because I think for the Patriots to be good, Scott, like, doesn't Mac Jones have to not just be what he was as a rookie? He has to take like a step from what he was as a rookie after taking a step back as a second season. So I do see the scenario where the Patriots completely fall apart here. They obviously didn't win a Super Bowl last year like the Rams did in this example, but they are still a name brand franchise that has been on the fringe of playoff contention the last few years, even without Tom Brady.
It says a lot about the current version of the Patriots that the most optimistic thing you can say about their offense is at least that Patricia clown car is gone. And Bill O'Brien, who, another case of a guy, we're not sure we like him as a head coach, but we certainly like him as an offensive coordinator. Really good hire, good time for him to rehabilitate his name and for them to get an adult in that offensive room. But it's Mac Jones. I mean, he's like Stillwater and Almost Famous. You know, he's a mid-level quarterback struggling with his harsh limitations in the face of stardom. And Bill Belichick would love to talk about giving truth serum, man. But I'd love to give truth serum to Bill Belichick and just listen to him go off for like 3 or 4 hours. That would like be the best day of my life. But I mean, you know, he's never going to do that. Bill Belichick, you know, you're lucky Bill Belichick will concede there's a game on Sunday in Foxborough. I mean, he doesn't want anybody to know anything. But he would love to move on from Mac Jones. It's just the problem with quarterbacks is there isn't a franchise quarterback tree that fall, you know, with the guys fall from the branches. And one of the worst things you can do in the NFL, if you want to be great again, is be in the middle because you don't draft early enough to have a guy who's got the high ceiling. So then you're hoping to get lucky with Mac Jones, or you're hoping, you know, in the middle of the first round, who was a player who opinions were very split on. I still speak about the truth serum. Did the 49ers really consider Mac Jones at number two or number three in that draft? It just seems kind of silly now to think about that, but maybe it was true. This team, I hope they don't sign Hopkins. I don't think if I were Hopkins, I wouldn't want to play here. The team's not going to the playoffs. Yeah. The quarterback has no upside. Even if you're a Mac Jones guy, you're trying to talk yourself into, oh yeah, Mac Jones, he could be like a league average or a little bit better than league average quarterback. Nobody's touting him as like a future MVP. You say to me, Mac Jones, like what are the Mac Jones plays you remember? I remember him throwing interceptions and taking cheap shots at defenders after the play. Yeah. That's what I remember. And I remember him, of course, you know, throwing to that ridiculous conveyor belt of talent at Alabama, you know, throwing to Devonta Smith and watching Smith house it after that. But this team is such a boring team. Look, I think Mike Gesicki might have maybe a little bit of bounce, would get out of a team where he didn't fit the offense at all. I think O'Brien will be good for him, a couple of Penn State guys. But Ramondre Stevenson, I think everybody likes. I can draft Stevenson. Stevenson's a green light player for me, even though I hate the offense. But I'm not going to draft any of the receivers. I'll take Gesicki in like leagues where multiple tight end, jumbo tight end scoring, stuff like that. I can live with that. But I don't think Mac Jones starts for them opening day next season.
Yeah. And by the way, you're talking about this team being what it is, being boring, and like Mac Jones might not being it. This division is going to be tough. We might talk about a couple of these other teams later on. But in a best case scenario, the Jets are great with Aaron Rodgers. You know, Tua plays a full season with the Dolphins. Like, we know the Bills are still really, really good. That's a tough division. Like, this team could easily bottom out. And then, man, it gets really interesting. Like, does Robert Kraft fire Bill Belichick, Scott? Does Bill Belichick, like, kind of do a mutual parting of the ways with the Patriots? Because we know he wants to get this all-time win record, right? I can't remember off the top of my head, like, how far away he is from it. But it's going to at least take a couple of seasons unless the Patriots just absolutely demolish expectations this year and next. So I don't know, man. I think they kind of make sense as a finalist here just because that is the picture that you painted there is of not just I think at best they're a boring team, but they're also a very fragile team too, where they don't have, I mean, Ramondre Stevenson is a very, very good running back. I don't think they have a single like superstar on the roster from an offensive standpoint. Maybe Stevenson takes that leap, but they don't have a single superstar to lay their head on, you know, on offense. They don't even have like a quarterback that we know is an average starter in the NFL. And I mean, the defense is always going to be good under Belichick, but that sounded like a very fragile operation, the one that you just painted for me here.
Yeah, just quickly glancing on Pro Football Reference, I believe Belichick is still 30 wins behind Don Shula. This looks to me, when the Tom Brady era ended in New England, they lost to Ryan Fitzpatrick in the final week of the season. They lost their first round bye. And then they lost in the playoffs to Ryan Tannehill and Vrabel and those guys. And Brady's last pass, famously, for the Patriots was an interception. I think it was actually a pick six. And Brady realized at that point, look, I need to go somewhere different. You go somewhere warm. You need to go somewhere where, like, maybe Mike Evans and Chris Godwin play because the skill talent here isn't that good. It was a breakup that made sense. And you know, I guess Brady wins the breakup because they win the Super Bowl the next year. But the Patriots, it made sense for them too because they needed to move on and find a long-term answer at quarterback. Of course, we know it's probably not Mac Jones. I think the Patriots, Kraft, Belichick, I think they might be at a mutual point where the worst thing you can have is a legacy. I think Derek Jeter, the final days of the Yankees, where he probably shouldn't be playing shortstop anymore, but nobody wanted to tell Derek Jeter, you can't be the shortstop anymore. Bob Kraft does not want to fire Bill Belichick. And Belichick certainly doesn't want to get fired. I think maybe Belichick, if he can get 30 more wins for the Patriots, that's four seasons. I'm not even sure four seasons would do it. Time. If I'm Bill Belichick, I think maybe you broker maybe this is just time for an amicable parting. And then he can be the guy, like, let's say the Cowboys, they have a successful season, but Mike McCarthy kind of McCarthy's it up. They need somebody to get over the hump. And I know Belichick and Jerry Jones seem like a natural fit, but maybe the idea is you're coming in for short term. You're here for 2 or 3 years. We're going to win a championship, damn it. Or you're the best coach in the NFL history, or at least in modern NFL history. You know, people can debate the older coaches if they want, you know, Lombardi and Hallis and whatever. I can't really speak to that, but he might make sense as like a Winston Wolf fixer who comes in, does his thing, and 30 minutes, he's gone. Fixer. Yeah, he wants that record, man. My advice to Bill Belichick would be make the amicable divorce and then go somewhere where you can win right away. Because New England, they got to get out the shovels, man. They talk about rebuilding. It's going to take a while. And I don't know that Bill Belichick has 3 or 4 years to waste on a team that is this far away from being relevant.
Just jumping in here, Scott, because you just said Bill Belichick to the Cowboys, which obviously would be a dream on paper. I do want to throw some water on that just because I do think if things don't work out with Mike McCarthy, the natural successor in Dallas will be Dan Quinn. And the only way he's not necessarily the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys is if somehow the Dallas defense craters as well. But I don't foresee that. On the point if it would be a fit with Jerry Jones, one thing I'd like to point out was no one saw it coming in 2003 when Jerry went after Big Tuna, Bill Parcells. That marriage actually worked out quite well to the point that I think Jerry wanted him to coach longer than he actually did when he retired in 2006.
That's a great point on Quinn, who, I mean, look, he went to a Super Bowl, right? I mean, it's not entirely his fault that they somehow lost that game, but Dan Quinn is certainly rebuilding his reputation and a very respected coordinator. We'll be a head coach again. And as you say, he's probably the coach in waiting here. He's probably the first guy in the bullpen to go to. I just came up with a ready-made example of a team. Maybe if things go wrong with the Chargers, which I think we're going to talk about later, maybe Belichick to the Chargers would make sense. Again, a team that could tell itself a story. They could be the Chargers are next year's champions, right? I mean, they always have that roster that we get excited about. The point is this, if Belichick ever does leave New England, he's, you know, a team that's a fixer-upper, he's not going to another fixer-upper. He's going to go somewhere where he can parachute into the ninth inning. It's like, okay, let's do this thing.
Yeah, he'll have no shortage of suitors. So I don't know, Scott. Again, I'd vote for them as a finalist. What do you think?
You know what? Maybe he should be a defensive coordinator for Nick Saban. What do you think about that? I'm kidding, of course. He's never going to take that job, although he's good friends with Nick Saban. Yeah. You know, we could put the – you. I lean no only because I just don't think the Patriots are interesting enough that I want to put a lot of value in calling their demise ahead of time. I just think, well, what – yeah. Who did I save you from? Did I save you from drafting Juju and Mac Jones? You know, Hunter, right. You know, Hunter Henry, you know, those guys, your staples, and Devontae Parker's not in your roster. Tyquan Thurton's not in your roster because we told you not to draft these guys. I don't know that we're saving people by doing that. So just from an altruistic standpoint, I'm going to say no.
All right, cool. Then we'll pass on it and we'll move on to a team that certainly at least has one guy that we're very, very interested in drafting. The Minnesota Vikings might have the presumptive number one overall pick in Justin Jefferson on their roster. We know they won 13 games last year, and basically everybody's going to tell you they're not going to win 13 games this year. Yeah. There's part of me that, like, the reverse of what we just talked about with the Patriots. Well, all right, we talked, Scott, last time you and I spoke that, okay, maybe the Lions are a little overrated going into this year. Spoiler alert, we're going to talk about the Green Bay Packers here in just a second. Like, do we really think the Bears are going to take that leap this year? I have my questions, although I did try to push, I can't remember which, I think it was with Dalton in this year's Jaguars episode, I tried to push them as like, maybe they're in the fringe of that discussion, although certainly not my favorite pick. I don't know, like, what's stopping the Vikings from winning this division again this year? I'm not sure, but I also think that they are certainly much like the Rams last year, where they have Justin Jefferson, you know, and they've got like maybe Danielle Hunter, who's a really good pass rusher, but he's also, you know, disgruntled with his contract. He's still probably a trade candidate. And they brought in a lot of guys on like 1 year deals. That defense, though, on paper still doesn't look very good, right? Like they look kind of like the Rams last year, where they're very top heavy. We know who Kirk Cousins is. And Kirk Cousins, by the way, I think very Stafford-esque, that as long as he's healthy, there's going to be some level of functionality on the offense. But I don't know. What if Alexander Mattison is not like ready to be a feature back? You know, there's a lot of fragility here, I think, with the Minnesota Vikings.
For sure. And for the most part, it centers around Cousins. I like what you said, by the way. We just can't say regression and leave the room, right? It has to be regression to what? They're not going to win 13 games. Well, what are they going to do? They're going to win 11? They're going to win 9? Are they still going to win the division? Are they still going to be a playoff team? the thing about Cousins, okay, into an age 35 season. Last year, Justin Jefferson was so good that he's on the cover. I know he's on the cover of the Fantasy Football Index, which is going to be out in a couple of weeks, which to me is still, I get excited when I see the index. It's the first fantasy magazine that I really got into. It's a big reason why I'm in the industry. They've really been good to me, just as somebody who's contributed to them every here and there. And he's their cover boy. Last year, Jefferson was, you know, great. He's been great the moment he joined the NFL. And yet, Kirk Cousins had a league average yards per attempt. His sack rate was under the league average. His quarterback rating went down, whatever you would think a quarterback rating. Just about any efficiency metric for Kirk Cousins went down, despite having this Justin Jefferson race car that he can throw to on any down and getting a fresh coat of paint in the coaching room, right? I mean, they got rid of that Mike Zimmer staff, and it is probably time for them to move up forward. And they had all these new ideas with Kevin O'Connell and everything. And what I'm trying to say is Kirk Cousins had a disappointing year. If I had told you, okay, well, Vikings are going to win 13 and Justin Jefferson is going to play so well that he'll be in the discussion for the 101 the next year, it'll be magazine cover boy and everything. You know, what kind of year did Kirk Cousins have? It wasn't that great. It was his, since he became a full-time starter, it was actually his worst index quarterback rating. And again, I know quarterback rating is kind of a, it's just a little catch-all back of envelope stat, but it was one of his worst seasons despite having a receiver at the peak of his powers. Now he's 35. At least Cousins doesn't run. And I say that as a positive because it means he'll probably stay healthy. He's been somebody who plays a full season just about every year. But I can easily tell myself a story that Kirk Cousins continues to slip. And if Jordan Addison isn't ready to go, if you know, Osborne isn't maybe ready to step up in class on this depth chart, they obviously lost Cook. Madison maybe or maybe not isn't a true featured back. All of a sudden, it's Jordan Jefferson and like a ghost town on this depth chart.
And, you know, you mentioned Jordan Addison, like they're banking a lot on him. Like, I think they look at Kirk. Well, it's funny because a couple things here, like they didn't extend Kirk Cousins this year. You know, usually they do the extend Kirk Cousins thing to save the salary cap room, you know, but they didn't do that. And basically he's going to walk into free agency next year because they can't franchise tag him either because his contract will void after the franchise tag period. So like, Kirk Cousins might be looking at getting himself another shot at free agency after really cashing in on it with the Vikings, you know, back in 2017. So, or after the 2017 season. So I don't really know if they're betting on Cousins having a better year. This is what's so funny about the Vikings, that they win 13 games last year. And I can't tell if like they might still very well be in a rebuilding period here, but I do think they're counting on Jordan Addison and TJ Hockenson now having a full offseason with the team being enough to lift the floor and ceiling of this offense and what it was last year. Cause I mean, Justin Jefferson might well be the best player on the planet right now. Certainly one of the best receivers in the NFL. Nobody gets more defensive attention than Justin Jefferson did last year, but it was still very like, all right, if Justin Jefferson doesn't have an outrageous game, this offense is probably not going to be very good. Look at what they were against the Dallas Cowboys. Look at what they were against the Packers to end the season last year. That one, there was another game I think mixed in there too. Well, there was one game where the Lions really did a lot to shut down Justin Jefferson. They still beat the Lions early on in the season, but that was when the Lions were kind of floundering. So I don't know about that. But Jordan Addison also, by the way, is like, I don't think he's been practicing in mini camp. Like kind of Kevin O'Connell says, it's my expectation that he will be a full go for training camp. Kind of tough when rookies don't get like that running head start, right? I mean, we have seen like take a minute for these rookie receivers, even if I think Addison has a pro ready skill set. Yeah, what if he isn't ready to be a full snap player from for the first 4 weeks of the season or something like that because he had an injury in the offseason or whatever? I don't know. There, again, a lot of fragility here with the Minnesota Vikings, and I can't really tell if their GM, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, is like cool with that. Like, okay, we're still looking at this as like a long-term sort of project, and hey, if Cousins doesn't have a great year and we go, you know, 8-9 or whatever, that's fine for the long-term plan here. I think with Jefferson, it's going to be tough for them to totally bottom out unless Jefferson gets hurt. But I mean, again, I think we probably would have said that with the Rams last year in Cooper Kupp. So I don't know.
I'm glad you mentioned Hockenson, who I should have mentioned, who is a formidable player, did play well with the Vikings. Interesting just to see a midseason trade in division of a player that early in his career. It just doesn't happen all that often, but he was certainly somebody we should have talked about. This isn't really a hot take because it's not like people don't know Jamar Chase is great, but I just have this suspicion that this is the year that Jamar Chase, remember Jamar Chase, I think it was like a year ago or something. They were asking Jamar Chase about what he thought of different receivers and Justin Jefferson's name came up and Chase just kind of matter of factly, he didn't mean it as a diss. They obviously played together with Joe Burrow at LSU and that pinball team. What a fun offense that was. And he just kind of matter of fact, he said, yeah, I'm better than Justin. And he didn't even mean it. It didn't sound like a diss. It wasn't like, you know, Kobe and Shaq yeah. going each other, whatever. I mean, and look, to be great in the NFL, if you're going to be an alpha receiver, you better believe you're better than everybody else. These guys are not shrinking violets. I get it. But I wonder if like one of the, you know, the hot takes people are writing about 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks into the season. Oh, remember when people thought Justin Jefferson was the best receiver in football, the best young receiver in football, or the magazine guy? It's Jamar Chase. He's the guy who actually is the guy you want. Now, you know, we're obviously comparing apples and oranges because I think any receiver, if given truth serum, would rather play with Joe Burrow than Kirk Cousins. But
yeah,
I am. Here's the bottom line with this, right? I don't think there's anything wrong with taking Chase over Jefferson. Let me leave you with that. Don't be fooled. Jefferson is fantastic, and you could take him at 101, but you don't have to. You could take him as the first receiver. You don't have to do that either. And if you want to say, you know what, I want to be ahead of this on Jamar Chase, I think this is the year he blows out. He's obviously been great already. Jamar Chase is good at football is not any kind of a new illuminary idea, but maybe Jamar Chase is on all the magazine covers next year.
Number one, Scott. You and I are on the same wavelength here, where I think that this could be the year for Jamar Chase to have that, to take that type of jump. And really, I don't even know that he has to take that type of jump. He has been an incredible player. I mean, his reception perception stats are insane for the fact that he runs like the most common route that he runs is the go route, is a nine route. It's like insane stuff.
Obviously, do not come out of your draft season without some Jamar Chase, man. You are not going to want to. And look, drafting great players, you have really, you know, hot strategy here. This is my experience imparted onto you, dear listener. But please get Jefferson. If you have to overpay for him in an auction, or you have to take a 101, you get the one pick. Oh, is he really a number one pick? Yeah, he could be. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And it's your point about like, hey, I think right now, if you went into a draft and took like Jamar Chase first overall over Justin Jefferson, people are going to laugh at you. But
so what?
But to paint the exact scenario, you know, my brother-in-law was talking to him this weekend, and he took Justin Jefferson first overall last year, and people in a non-full PPR league, and people laughed at him like, if you're going to even take a receiver, you shouldn't take a receiver first overall, number one. But number two, why wouldn't you just take Cooper Kupp, who had the season that he did last year? And I know that Cooper Kupp got hurt, but still, that just kind of proves the point that these like young elite players, we've already seen them be great. Like, what if there's more to them? So yeah, we're on the same wavelength with Chase, but do you think the Vikings make sense as a finalist here for this award?
I do. And just to put a period on the Chase discussion, don't be afraid to fail in anything in life, right? So what if they laugh at you? And so what if the pick doesn't work out? It doesn't matter. If you believe it's the right thing, do it. It's hard to win a league, especially a competitive league. If you think it's the right move, screw it. Go for it. You know, I'd rather fail with my ideas than just be some mamby-pamby person who's trying to crib off the guy next to me because I think he's maybe got the right answer. You know, go strong with your opinions, man. And if it's right, it'll be very satisfying.
All right. Well, let me tell you what. The Giants this offseason operated as if they were not afraid to make a mistake giving Daniel Jones that big ass contract. I think it's pretty easy to paint the scenario where the Giants are you know, a Rams level disaster this year. Now, Daniel Jones is not worth that contract. They made way too big of a bet on Daniel Jones, who absolutely took a leap last year as an individual player. Also, the Brian Daboll coaching staff and Mike Kafka is the offensive coordinator. They got a lot out of Daniel Jones without a lot of talent around him. They did add a guy like Darren Waller this year. You know, he's definitely a really good player, but you know, he hasn't been at his peak, whether injuries or whatever, for a couple of years. They buy him for the 100th overall pick. You know, Paris Campbell's getting some mini camp hype. I mean, look, I'm not being disrespectful to Paris Campbell here, but Paris Campbell gets mini camp. He's the type of player that gets mini camp hype every year. Like these shifty. I mean, look, he could have an interesting role in this offense, but even if he does, he's not going to be the reason that they're like a top 10 offense or anything. You know, Saquon Barkley, he's not, you know, the most happy right now playing on the franchise tag. We'll see how that works out. There's definitely a lot of fragility, I think, with the Giants. And they're also a team, by the way, Scott, that, it's a little weird because they gave out that massive contract to Daniel Jones, but I think they're pretty similar to the Vikings, where their season last year was an ahead of schedule type of season. So if they take a small step back, I think they'd actually probably be okay with that. Like take one step back to go two steps forwards the next season. Now, But I think we're talking about a scenario here where they don't take one step back. They take like three or four steps back. And we're like, ooh, I like Brian Daboll as a coach. I really like what they did in 2022. But did they make a big mistake giving this Daniel Jones contract out and kind of being, you know, betting on that?
I think the mistake they made is not supporting Daniel Jones. I look at this roster, this depth chart of skill talent. Where are the other guys? Did the intern delete all the receivers? Isaiah Hodgins, Darius Slayton, Paris Campbell, Jalen Hyatt, Wandale Robinson, Sterling Shepard, Jamison Crowder. I'm reading top to bottom their current wide receiver depth chart. Everybody's asked to be one or two slots probably above where they should be, with the possible exception of Robinson. We'll see where he's a young player. Maybe he'd get better. Darren Waller turns
also might not, by the way, just on Wandale Robinson, is currently not like playing. He tore his ACL late in the season last year.
That's true.
Dan Duggan from The Athletic noted that he doesn't even know if he's gonna be healthy to start the season, right? Like, which is probably why they have 1,000 slot receivers. They have Sterling, Jamison Crowder, the whole crew, you know. So, and I love Sterling Shepard, but I mean, we know the deal there. So I mean, this is a lot of, not only is it a strange cast of names, it's also a lot of health risk guys in this group as well.
I haven't followed it that closely. Have they been linked to Hopkins at all? Because talk about a team that could really use him.
No, which I think is weird. No, because they haven't. And again, you know, we've talked about with Hopkins, like it's a culture fit type of thing. You know, he's said he's not a big practice player. Maybe that's not what Brian Daboll wants to bring in the mix here. But I maintain that like the Giants and the Lions aren't often talked about with Hopkins. Like it's this tight. He's thinking of his Titans, thinking of his Patriots. People still talk about the Bills and the Chiefs. I think these are two teams that like, hey, you want to make sure you don't fall off the cliff here. I think you get a guy like that in the building and like have a reliable target for your quarterback.
I foresee a middle of the season where Jones isn't playing well and people are lambasting him. And I fall down on the side of, well, look what's around him. How was he supposed to succeed with this set of receivers? And Waller turns 31, tight end changing team. She turns 31 in September. I still think the Barkley thing will get fixed, but the depth chart behind him is, I know he's one of the few last bell cows left and everything. You need a better second running back than Matt Breida. That's not good enough. So I think this offense could collapse and it not be Jones's fault, even though Jones will, the way the NFL works is everything's the quarterback's fault. So it will be Jones's fault, but there will be a faction of people who'll be like, no, it really is the build of the roster. That's what's at blame here. I think that's what's going to happen with the Giants. And I thought Minnesota made sense as a possible finalist. I'm not pounding the table for the Giants as a finalist, but I could definitely see collapse here. If you want to go there, I'll sit next to you.
Yeah, I don't know if I see full collapse either. But I could see a scenario where we're talking about Daniel Jones, like we're talking about Jalen Hurts after that Bucks playoff game 2 years ago, where it's like, oh, he's probably not the guy. And then it's like, well, actually, if you go out and make a big swing for a star receiver, yeah, he can probably be the guy. And like, maybe that's Daniel Jones at the end of the year. I don't know. I think among the teams we're looking at the rest of the way, I kind of think they make sense as a potential answer here. Just because there is the risk that Daniel Jones himself falls off and the risk that the ecosystem is not good enough. But again, I think that they're okay with that, but yeah, I don't know, man. I kind of think they make sense as a finalist, but I'm willing to
say, I've always kind of been a little bit of a Daniel Jones sympathizer, and I thought he played very well last year. And I know Daboll got a lot of the credit and he deserves a lot of the credit. That was another team that needed adults in the coaching room and they finally got them. But I still think Daniel Jones can play. And if for any reason he became available again, I mean, I know they just signed him and everything, but I think he has a chance to be a good player. I think he has an upside. Like Mac Jones has, I talk about having a really no tangible upside. I still think there's upside with Daniel Jones.
I agree with you. I'm okay penciling them in as a finalist, but
We can always erase them later.
Makes sense.
Yeah, let's do it.
Erase them later. Yeah. And I'm with you, by the way, that I think that Daniel Jones probably got a little bit too much crap in his first couple of seasons. And there was like a mutual beneficiary there between him and Brian Daboll. Okay, last team in my most likely candidates here, the Green Bay Packers. They don't have Aaron Rodgers anymore. Jordan Love's out here on Father's Day, like wishing happy Father's Day to the Bears fans. I don't know. I don't know which social media person like greenlit him doing that. Doesn't make any sense. Scott, I'm not sure how that's like a, like, I don't know how you owned the Bears fans by wishing them a happy Father's Day. That one doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So Jordan Love, maybe he doesn't take the leap that the Packers maybe sort of kind of think he takes this year. And this is just like a really, really young offensive roster. It's a defense that hasn't quite been able to cash in on the amount of resources they put into it. You know, they brought back Joe Barry. They're betting on that one, like finally working out as the defense coordinator. But, you know, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, Luke Musgrave is just going to walk into week one as the starting tight end. Like Aaron Jones is the old, old man of the skill position room right now. It's a very young roster that could, I mean, again, maybe collapse is not the right word, but they could certainly be in for a long year in Green Bay if Jordan Love is not, like, do they need Jordan Love to be a teammate elevator to be a very good team this year just because of how young all of those guys are?
They probably do, and we have no proof. The best thing you can say about Jordan Love is at least last year there were some glimpses and flashes that maybe he could have an NFL career, where a year ago maybe nobody thought that. And you're right, that tweet is so strange. He basically, if Aaron Rodgers wants to say, I own the Bears, that's fine because he has. And I know like our colleagues Andy Behrens and Jason Kabaka are just so glad that Aaron Rodgers is gone because he tormented the Bears for like 15 years, it felt like. What's Jordan Love done? You know, you're sitting on the sidelines, you're holding the clipboard, working the headset when they were beating
but Bears. Also, it doesn't even make any sense if he wanted to say, I own you, but like by wishing you a happy Father's Day. Like the whole premise of the insult doesn't make any sense, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, I don't think the Packers make a lot of sense, man. I've been an Aaron Jones guy most of his career. I'm not going to be an Aaron Jones guy this year. AJ Dillon, I'm out. I'll need somebody like Matt Harmon to talk me into one of the receivers. This has, and I realize we're throwing cold water on a lot of teams here because we're saying the Vikings are going to regress. And I've said that the Lions are a little bit too trendy. Nobody thinks the Bears are going to be, we're hoping the Bears are better, but nobody thinks they're going to be great. These teams all play each other and somebody comes out of the game with a win, right? Or you get six division games. Somebody's going to go 4-2 or 5-1 in the division. That's usually how it works. But I sure as heck don't think it's going to be the Packers. The Packers are like an illegal chess move to me. I just don't even see them.
Are we looking at like the Vikings regress and they're, 9-8 this year and they win the division at 9-8? I think that's very possible.
I'll tell you what, if I were any team and you can get 10 wins right now, I'd take it. And 9 wins, you have a punt. 9 wins means you had a chance. If you win your final game, you're in the playoffs. Yeah, it's not going to be a bottom out the way the NFC South was last year, or the way the AFC South seems to be every other year, but they're not. This division, the NFC it's just kind of a messy time for the NFC because the whole South is rebuilding. Yeah, Arizona's horrible in the West. And this division, man, I ultimately don't want to put them in the finalist group because I just don't know that we're saving people that much by giving them a Green Bay fade, if that makes any sense. I think everybody's going to have the same hesitation of Jordan Love, and that's going to depress the values of everybody in this offense. Your ecosystem, my infrastructure. I don't want to bet in this infrastructure. Maybe I'm not giving LaFleur enough credit. It's so difficult when a team is successful and you have a star quarterback. How much was the quarterback? How much was the coach, the coordinator? You know, when Brian Daboll went to the Giants, it was hard to know, well, how much credit did he really deserve for Josh Allen? Maybe quite a bit. And we could say that now with some level of confidence, but you know, then you think of somebody like Arthur Smith, and I know that you may like Arthur Smith more than I do, but I was really high on him in Tennessee. I've not been that high on him during his Atlanta time. And we'll find out a lot about Arthur Smith this year because, man, they have such great talent there. We don't know about Ritter, but they have the envy of the league at every other position, it feels like. I mean, they have really stocked the fridge really well, which means we're going to find out about Arthur Smith. But how good of a coach, how good of an offensive designer do you think LaFleur is?
I think he's a pretty good offensive designer. I think that interestingly with this offense, like the, Shanahan offense. And I mean, obviously with Kyle Shanahan, like when they've got a guy like Matthew Stafford with the Rams, Matt Ryan with the Falcons, when Kyle Shanahan was there, like when they have a quarterback that is an established player, like you get them in this offense and they become great. You know, Stafford with the Rams, like I said, Ryan with the Falcons, and obviously Aaron Rodgers in this offense. Like I think LaFleur deserves some credit there. But I mean, I guess you could say Jared Goff with the Rams, like they developed Jared Goff. And yeah, that's true. They developed Jared Goff as a young quarterback into a solid starter. And I think maybe that's what the LaFleur ecosystem or LaFleur brain trust here in Green Bay is going to try to do with Jordan Love. Like they're going to try to develop him into average starter. Then maybe once he gets to that level, they can push him to like the superstar level quarterback. I just don't, we haven't seen like a superstar level quarterback come out of this offensive ecos, like this offensive tree, if that makes sense. It's a guy who is already sort of an established player, and same thing with Rodgers, as an established player who they, who jumped to superstar status, but he wasn't a guy that like developed in this offense. So I don't know. It's a,
tell me this, when the season ends and we have to give a one or two sentence postmortem exit interview of where we're at with Jordan Love with the 2023 season just completed, what are we going to be saying?
I think it's something like, let's give it one more year.
Yeah, it's basically too, we can't say for sure he's not good. We got to give him another season. Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, and I think the biggest reason is just, again, this is a really young team. And the one guy that I would say people are drafting without, like, with kind of reckless abandon is Christian Watson.
Who, yeah.
Based on what we saw with Christian Watson in his rookie year, he is a good player. And I know like his yards per route run, targets per route run, yada, yada, is going to look great in that like short stint. But he was a guy that was a volatile player. And I think he is still like I compared him to Martavis Bryant. That was my player comparison. And Martavis Bryant, obviously a really good player, but he was not like a true number one receiver. And I think Jaden Reed's a guy that they're counting on to be kind of like their starting slot receiver. Again, he's a rookie. Luke Musgrave, we talk about rookie tight ends, hey, we got to give him a beat, but they're basically like moonwalking him into the starting job. So yeah, I'm again with the Packers, I don't know that they're a finalist either, just because again, I think they're probably, even these teams we're talking to here, the Vikings, they might be okay taking one step back. The Giants might be okay taking one step back. I think the Packers know they're going to take one step back, because regardless of if Rodgers is, you know, on the decline, he's doing a lot of heavy lifting for that team last year. He contributed to some problems for sure, but you know, he's still Aaron Rodgers. He's still going to, you know, be a really good quarterback. So I think they're okay taking that one step back, basically. So I don't know that it makes sense as a finalist.
Let's get to the spicy part of the menu. I know we're already in any Pianowski podcast running low on time, so let's get to the good stuff.
That's okay. Okay, spicy candidates. And if you, by the way, if you have anyone that we haven't discussed on the podcast that you want to throw into the mix here, I'm totally into it. My three spicy candidates: Chargers, Dolphins, Jets. I think the Jets and Dolphins are easy to talk about here, because okay, Aaron Rodgers, you know, he really falls off the cliff. They might have like this one year and then that's it. Okay, they could totally fall apart. And by the way, Rodgers could have a great year and then retire. And it's like, oh boy, what are the Jets going to do after that? That one's easy. I'm totally okay if you want to talk about them as a finalist. The Dolphins also, I think, are certainly a finalist, because we've seen them, what they look like without Tua. And they still got into the playoffs. But man, that offense, like for typically what we think, like what I just talked about with that tree of offensive coaches, they typically elevate the floor of like really whatever quarterbacks. Man, there was no elevating the floor with like Skylar Thompson last year. That offense got pretty disastrous pretty quick without Tua. So I don't want to say that it's a fragilely built offense, but it is a little interesting that, hey, you got Tyreek Hill, you got Jaylen Waddle, but like Teddy couldn't make the offense work really. Skylar Thompson couldn't make the offense work really. Like, I don't know. The Dolphins, I just have, people are excited about the Dolphins, and I kind of have one eyebrow raised at them. But let me talk to you about the Chargers here real quick, Scott, because the Chargers right now are, they're by far the spiciest one. And I think for them to have a Rams-like collapse, they probably need Justin Herbert to get hurt, which, you know, knock on wood, nobody wants to see that happen. I certainly don't want to see that happen. But they're $60 million over the salary cap in 2024. They are absolutely, like, if you want to think about the Rams level of, they're all in for this year, they're keeping this window open one more year, they definitely make sense there. You know, they restructure Mike Williams, they restructure Keenan Allen when people thought they might move on from one or potentially both of those guys. Those are two injury risks. You know, JC Jackson's on the books, and like, we don't even know what that situation is going to look like. Khalil Mack could be gone after this year. Even Joey Bosa, they could potentially, you know, cut him pre-June 1 and actually save a little, you know, save some money, or potentially, you know, get a little bit, get out of Joey Bosa's contract. I don't know, right? Like, again, Keenan Allen is a guy that could be elsewhere next year. Mike Williams could be elsewhere in 2024. You know, Austin Eckler literally said in minicamp the other day, I am contractually obligated to be here one more year. Not really what you want to hear out of one of like your best players and most well-known and most famous players. Their defense doesn't look good on paper. What if Quentin Johnston isn't ready to rock this year? I think there's more fragility to, and I'm kind of like in on the Chargers being a pretty decent team this year and being a pretty decent offense, but we already saw the fragility of this team last year, and I think it's maybe even more so this year.
Man, that was well said. I feel like I walked into the car dealership and I wasn't going to buy a car. I was just shopping and you sold me on the car and I'm driving away with it. Because the Chargers, look, we know it'd be great if Quentin Johnson's great this year. We'll see. I mean, you never know with rookie receivers. I know the paradigm changed about 10 years ago, that 2014 class, but you can't expect them to elevate a team right away. It's just not fair. But overall, this receiver room couldn't get stopped for speeding in a school zone. It's slow. It's old. You talked about Eckler basically saying, hey, I'm here for another year. And I, the thing with the Chargers is, it's not that to me they fit the collapse narrative, although unless Herbert got hurt and that's cheating because, you know, 29 or 30 teams in the league are screwed if their quarterback gets hurt. So that's, I'm not going to use that, although it's unavoidable when we talk about Miami. You have to talk about Tua's injury concerns because they're front door right now. They're not back door. But I could see the Chargers having a middling 8-9, 9-8 season. They blow a game in the final week of the season, don't make the playoffs. And then they're finally like, you know what? We get to detonate. Herbert stays and everybody else is gettable. Everybody else is cuttable, you know, for the most part. That you have sold me on. I can see the Chargers deciding they're at a fork in the road where it's like, you know what? We get to start over. We have the one position you have to have right. We aged out at other positions. We need to get younger. We need to get faster. And we just need to have a fresh coat of paint in like every one of these rooms. So I like the way you sold that. When I first saw the Chargers on the script, I thought, okay, well, I'll listen to Matt talk about it, but I'm not going to agree with him. I actually agree with Matt Harmon.
Yeah, it's just, I kind of think they're 1 year too late. I think that even if Brandon Staley ends up being a good head coach, like the fact that Sean Payton was available last year, I think they should have gone for it. You know, I think they should have gone for Peyton and been like all in on offense, because you just you're never gonna stop Patrick Mahomes in the division. You might as well try to outscore him. And I just, you know, even with Kellen Moore there, I still think that I've got enough questions about Kellen Moore where I just have a lot of questions about the Chargers. Scott, let me tell you what. I don't know if I have the stones. I don't know if I have the fortitude to say that the Chargers are this year's Rams. Like, put that out on social media and put them as like the group here, but I can, like, I might have sold you a car that I know has, like, you know, 2 more years left on the engine. Like, there, you know, something I'm not sure I totally believe in the product I just sold you. But man, you know, people hate this kind of analysis, but I can at least tell myself the story where that, yeah, okay, the Chargers pushed this window 1 year too long. And we're talking about, like you said, Telesco's out of there, Staley's out of there. You know, we're looking at Justin Herbert on like the second iteration of whatever his career is with the Chargers. And by the way, like I said, they're $60 million over the cap and they haven't extended Herbert yet. Like, that still has to happen. So there's a lot. This is a lot going on with the Chargers here.
Yeah, it's just they fit half of the suit. I can see them in the rebuild mode. I don't think they're going to crater. I don't think it's going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe the Chargers are 4-13. I just think this roster is too talented for that. But if you're not on the inside track to winning a championship, you have to start over when you already have the franchise. And as you said, Herbert, you know, he's not on a second contract yet. So that's going to change the whole shape of the, and that's the sin of this, right? When you can get somebody who's great, it's been said a million times, when you can get somebody who's great as a quarterback on his rookie deal, that gives you such an advantage because you could build a roster without having to devote so much of your money to that guy. But the problem with that is eventually he's going to come up for a second contract and you have to sign those guys. You pretty much have to give them whatever they want. And then the rules are totally different.
All right. So are we putting the Chargers as a finalist? Are we putting the Dolphins, Jets, or like doubling back to one of the most likely? Are we putting a dark horse candidate? Because we do need three finalists here, Scott. I don't know if I have the stones to put the Chargers here, but what do you think?
I don't know what the thing. The Dolphins feel cheap because it's like, well, yeah, it's going to collapse if Tua can't shake his injury concerns. Yeah, everybody knows that. I'm not going to predict that he's going to play 7 games. Obviously, again, every team is screwed if their quarterback gets hurt, with maybe one or two exceptions. So
the only thing I'll say about the Dolphins, because I kind of like want to put the Dolphins as my pick here, because not only is it Tua fragility, but we're also betting on like the infrastructure that they've built around Tua is not as good as people think, which is kind of like the kind of what the Rams were last year. Like, okay, well, look, they're. I've heard other people point this out, I saw somebody tweet it. I don't know. But if you look at the games where Tua was out, It's also when Teron Armstead was out, like, and he's a great left tackle, but he's going to miss games every single year. That offensive line might still be a problem. Like, is Devin Achane, like 180 pound back, really going to be their, like, their difference maker in the backfield as a rookie? You know, they don't necessarily have a proven third receiver. Like, is it going to be Chosen Anderson? They don't really have a tight end. Like, this defense, maybe they don't. They're betting on a full remodel of the defense under Vic Fangio and with Jalen Ramsey there. But what if Jalen Ramsey hit, like, the signs he showed of decline last year? Those are real signs of decline. I do think the, like, I mean, look, Dolphins fans, you know, fillet my mentions, it's fine. But I don't really view them in this class as, like, with a great AFC. I think they're a tier down from these other teams right now. And, you know, it's like a combination of, hey, they have injury problems and the infrastructure is not as good as people thought. I could see the Dolphins being that version of, like, this year's Rams. And again, then we're talking about, hey, they are in a full scale rebuild. They don't have the quarterback because of the injury stuff. And, you know, maybe Mike McDaniel, we're looking at him kind of sideways going into next year, even though I like Mike McDaniel an awful lot.
Miami's like the baseball pitcher that doesn't have the third pitch, right? Because they got probably the two best receivers that are on the same roster in Hill and Waddle. But then it's a major drop down. They don't have an impact tight end. They have a bunch of running backs who are good players, but none of them who are really, even the head of the committee, I don't even think. You know, Mostert can't stay healthy. You know, they have all these San Francisco casts off, and Mostert and Wilson. We'll see what Akani's ready to do with his first season in Miami. But they need a third pitch. And we know Tua doesn't run. And in any time where a mobile quarterback is something that teams like to have, if not mandatory, want to have, Tua doesn't offer that. And given his health concerns, maybe you don't want him to run anyway. Maybe it comes down to, how could Miami collapse other than Tua getting hurt? Maybe it's the idea that the offense never found that third pitch.
All right, give it to me. 1, 2, 3. Most likely, least likely to be this year's Rams.
Dolphins 1, Vikings 2, Giants 3.
I am going to go Dolphins 1, Giants 2, Vikings 3.
And now I'm disappointed. We don't have a tiebreak. We don't need a tiebreak now, which kind of disappoints me. The tiebreak is, like, the best part of the show.
I know. But hey, you know what? We need it. We needed one without the tiebreaker.
We need Colin to weigh in anyway. In fact, maybe Colin can just veto us. Maybe just tell us we're crazy.
I'm glad we could finally reach consensus on the fifth installment of this series, picking the Dolphins here. I do want to point out, I think with all the teams we've talked about, we've really been on the ball, because if you look at StatMuse and point differential, and what I mean by that, margin of victories or defeats last year, and you look at the top teams in the league, the 49ers and Bills, they were plus 10, where the Bears and Colts were negative 8 as the worst teams. All the teams we discussed today were within 1 point in their average margin of defeat or victory. Right, yeah. And that includes the Giants, the Vikings, the Dolphins, the Packers, surprisingly the Seahawks, or maybe not so surprisingly, and the Chargers and Patriots. So I think all the teams we discussed really can have a season that goes either way in 2023. And I certainly could see a situation where the Dolphins have a disastrous season.
Yep. I mean, that's always, like, when you're looking at the teams that you think could kind of fall apart, it's the teams that were, like, the Vikings are just a classic example. Like, oh, they were really good from a win standpoint, but their point differential, not so much. So I'll say for the Vikings, the reason, Scott, I just to have some sort of difference here. The reason you had them second, I had them third, right? You did have them second.
I did, although I honestly feel like I could have had these three in any order. I'll be honest about that.
The reason I think I ended up less bullish on the Vikings as this year's Rams type of team is that I think the division is very winnable. And again, I think they could be 9-8 and win that division. I think that's very, very possible. So, all right, Scott, well, you're right. We went long, hour 15 here of when you and I get together, that always it happens. But this is a great episode, man. Let the people know what you're working on right now, buddy.
Well, the show went long because Colin talked for at least 45 seconds. So I'm going to blame that on him. Yeah, Scott_Pianowski on Twitter. Fantasy baseball, a little golf, a little football, you know, whatever. I'm in season, whatever you want to talk about. We can talk music, we can talk food. And we were talking a lot of fantasy football this summer, man, because, you know, once those magazines, I know people kind of throw their nose down at magazines, but I still think, you know, we have vacation time coming up. You get a magazine, you go out on the beach or whatever, you take a little siesta. You got your Fantasy Football Index or the Lindy's Fantasy Magazine that Andy and I contributed to. I'm looking forward to reading those things. But you want to throw any of this around and point out any Jared Goff factual mistakes I have? Scott_Pianowski.
Yeah, Scott is always in season. That is for sure. And there really is no off season here for the podcast. That is definitely for sure. And on that note, Joining me on Thursday to continue our Flip the Script series is the one and only Andy Behrens. In that installment, we're going to be looking to identify who is this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown, a dark horse candidate that could finish as a top 10 wide receiver in 2023. Oh, baby, finally. No more team negativity and wide receiver positivity. That's what I'm talking about. Until then, we're out.